Hello and welcome to Rewatchable episode 116. We are covering The Legend of Korra, book one, episodes 11, Out of the Past, and episode 12, Endgame. That's right, season finale time. Dun, dun, dun. My name is Caitlin, and I am joined today by newbie Brittany and super fans Jack and Mitch. That's right, Jack is back.
Jack's back.
Yeah, it's just, you cannot get rid of me. I'm not going anywhere.
I know.
I'm sticking around.
I was like, oh, we'll see him in a couple months. Nope, here he is.
Yeah. Try a couple
months. Thanks for having me on again.
Thank you for
being
here.
That's what Comic-Con does, huh?
Yes, in case you're wondering where everybody is and why you're having repeat people this week, it's because the rest of Rewatchable is at Comic-Con and we are the Comic-Con Rejects. So, the Comic-Con Rejects will cover the season finale of The Legend of Korra. So, if you want to get...
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I feel like I've got more of an excuse than you guys, because I can't get there being in Australia, so...
Natalie got there.
No excuses. Natalie and Marima got there.
Oh, yeah. All right. I'll shut up.
Yeah. All right, so just a reminder, if you want to get in touch with us, our contact information, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us at Twitter at @re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hypeable.com. And you can also check out our Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. All right, so without further ado, we have a lot of feels to feel this week, so let's get into it. So, chapter 11, Skeletons in the Closet. And our synopsis. In this chapter, Zuko's sexy grandson's military fleet attacks Amon's forces as Korra and Mako go undercover as equalists to finish Amon once and for all. Happening upon a powerless Tarlok in an Air Temple Island jail cell, Korra and Mako are told a sad tale of Yukon's legacy post-trial. Amon's real name is Noatak, and Yukon raised him and the younger Tarlok to be the anywhere, anytime blendbenders that we know and love. Noatak ran away, and Tarlok became the slimy, yet slightly regretful politician we see before us. So we have a sad story in this episode. So I guess our first thought is, what did we think of that backstory, since it makes up the majority of the episode?
It was terrifying. Well,
Brittany, I think you need to realize something happened here. You used to think Asami was Amon. That's no longer canon. You can't even guess that she is anymore. How did you feel about that?
Asami? I didn't think Asami was Amon. Asami is Asami, man.
Okay, so you must be the only newbie that didn't like have 100% that you weren't 100% convinced that Asami was Amon, because this is like the deal. Like, we know it's none of the other characters. Is that like shocking to you that it's no one we knew? I guess.
No. I mean, I knew that Amon was a bender. Not out of, like, just I knew. I thought Amon was a bender, so that was the only thing that was confirmed. But wait, people think Asami is Amon? I'd never heard that.
Oh, yeah. No, no, I didn't think that was a thing.
Asami's when with them all the time.
Well, she wasn't there at the attack of the pro-bending arena, and Adiana and Karen had, like, a really good theory going from there. And I was really impressed that they caught that.
I did listen to that, and I thought that they were thinking of Azula for some reason, and I was like, whatever, they just don't know what they're talking about. So, yeah, no, I never thought that in a million years. That would be the last thing on my mind. But I knew that I did think that he was hurt by a firebender, so that was shocking to find out. Although his father is awful. Like, can we just talk about him for a minute? That guy.
Wait, this is hilarious that you're thinking that this scar is real. You thought Zuko's scar was
fake. Zuko's scar was face paint. That's right. Yeah, well, this one we don't really see, so I just trusted that it was, like, better animated,
right?
Because Korra has better animation than Avatar. And I was like, oh, this scar is going to be awesome once we see it. And then he took it off, I'm like, oh, it still looks like face paint. And this time it was face paint. And that's a lot of dedication, because you're wearing a mask all the time, like, and you paint your face all just in case all the time. That takes a lot of dedication to stick to that backstory.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's always blown me away. Like, I feel like he's like so neurotic. Like, I can imagine him like umbridging his pencils all in a straight line as well every day. You know, like.
Were you shocked, Brittany, that Tarlok and Amon were related?
No, only because I knew that Tarlok was up to something, and it was like either going against Amon or with Amon, and it makes so much sense that they're brothers. So it didn't really shock me per se, but it was like, oh, that makes sense.
And he took his brother's bending. Like, that's pretty cold.
It is cold. I still don't understand how he does that, though. Do we ever find out? Like, or he might not even be dead. I don't know. But...
Well, if you think about where Katara is saying she doesn't know how to heal it, I think that it's supposed to be still mystical for, from my understanding, for a future understanding. I think that this still has yet to be explored per what you're seeing right now, Brittany.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, or hoping at least, that we would get a little bit more. But anyway, the backstory, I thought it was interesting, and I'm glad they gave a whole episode to it, nearly a whole episode to it.
Yeah, I think the severity of the backstory deserves having the whole episode, because it's pretty damn intense. You know, they really go all out showing like the how gruesome it is, like bending the animals and their reactions to the bending, and it's just awful. But I usually like get a little bit sick of the sob story for the criminals. You know, then we'll find and eventually like them, but I like how this one, like, yeah, we kind of feel for Tarlok, but we definitely do not feel for Amon or Noatak, whatever his name is. Yeah, so I thought it was great.
It walks a fine line between me being too much and then not enough sympathy wise. I think it does a good job of that. Mm-hmm. What was the most brutal part, though, for you guys?
I reckon it was, I think probably just because I am an animal lover, seeing the dogs' faces as being bloodbended. Yeah.
Me too. And the noises they're making.
Mm. Oh, because they're like so intense when they first start out. Like they want to attack you, and then they're running away, and then you go after them again. Like that was just such a brutal way of storytelling that it hurts watching that scene.
Yeah, and I don't like when people are like constantly yelling at people. Like I understand motivation and stuff like that, but have you guys seen like Whiplash? Like where J.K. Oh, Whiplash Tenzin. Oh, I get it. J.K. Simmons is yelling at Miles Teller, like screaming in his face as he's drumming. And I'm like, I don't like it. I don't like it. Turn it off. So this was that same type of thing.
So like real Tenzin.
Yeah, real Tenzin yelling at these bloodbenders.
Mm-hmm. I just felt for them so bad because I there's nothing. There's a few things I don't like in the world, but I really don't like seeing. Like most people, I don't like seeing kids heavily mistreated by their parents or by their guardians, and this was all that. So, yeah.
And the hardest part is that the mom doesn't get a voice in all this, too. She's just silent other than, you know, her emotions, which they speak volumes, you know, when she's upset that Noatak got lost in the storm, for instance, assumedly. So, and it feels sad because... we're familiar with the Northern Water Tribe, you know? I mean, that's where, like, Princess Yue is from. Like, we're in that environment still from Atla. So to see someone from there become so evil, it's like we saw Hama come from our Southern Water Tribe, where, excuse me if I'm messing them up. I'm trying to remember. Which one is Katara and Sokka from?
Southern.
Okay, so then this is, like, our Northern Water Tribe bloodbenders. I don't know, just whatever it is, it hit home, you know? It really felt like this was an important storyline that you knew you would feel more if you watched Atla.
Yeah, I agree. Does this flashback kind of make it a little clearer why bloodbending is not cool in the eyes of the law at this point?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know we were talking when we were doing Atla, I just remember saying, like, why isn't she just bloodbending everyone around her, meaning Katara, because I thought it was kind of cool. And then now I'm like, oh, no. No one should ever bloodbend, ever.
The sound effects just really help show how bad it is. Ugh.
And the expressions on everyone's face when they're being bent, like when we see baby Tarlok being bent by Noatak, it's so gruesome because he looks like he wants to snap his neck in a way, but he's his brother and he's supposed to be just practicing on him. And then when he goes and does it on Yukon, he's in it for the kill. Like it's like Yukon's trying to fight it and you can see his hands twitching and everything just looks so like unnatural. And often the animation here reminds you of like The Grudge. And those little twitchy animations really freak me out. I don't know. Like, I appreciate that bloodbending came back, but I don't like it. It really makes me uncomfortable.
See, I really like that they made Amon be a bloodbender of sorts, because bloodbending, by its very nature, is pretty much taking away the person's free will. You know, so they've got no freedom because they can't move and all that. But then his whole stance with his attack and everything is that everyone should be equal and there should be equality everywhere. But then it's just like two complete juxtapositions from itself that he's basing his entire argument on. And I know that's the intent of like why they did it that way, but I just think it's really cool. It's pretty deep. Again, one of the moments with Korra and Atla that are very, very deep, which may go over the heads of the younger audience watching it.
Yeah, and this is where I wish that Karen and Adriana were on, because they were defending bloodbending as like, well, it should be good for the police force to use or whatever. But in this episode, we learned that Yacone states, yeah, Katara was a coward for making it illegal. And I found that interesting. I wonder how Karen and Adriana would have reacted now, knowing that Katara was the one that had the sense to say that this should be illegal and it wasn't just like a governing body.
I'll ask them on Twitter. I'll let you know.
There you go. Yeah. It makes sense, though, for someone who has that capability to be the one to say nobody should be doing this instead of somebody who doesn't know that feeling of power that you get from doing it and that feeling of taking away someone else's free will. So it makes a lot of sense that it would be Katara to do that.
And I just had to love that name drop of Katara, because I was like, my girl's a legend. Like, everyone knows her.
So something that kind of sticks out to me in this flashback is that, like, Tarlok is sort of portrayed as, like, kind of weak and pitiful and I can't hurt helpless animals. And then we see the adult he turns into, and he's a slime bender, basically. So does it make sense that the kid we see grows up to be the Tarlok that we first met?
No, I think we're missing, like, a huge chapter there.
Yeah.
Because I still don't see how it became that, how he turned so evil. Like, because he is the worst.
We need the college years, the young 20s that he had.
Yeah. Is there, like, a comic that came out in between?
There were horror comics just announced, matter of fact, but I don't think they're going to focus on Tarlok. They're focusing post-series.
They're not going to focus.
No.
They're like, Korra coming back in comic form, but just Tarlok. That's all we're going to talk about.
But, I mean, honestly, you never know what you're going to find out in comics about other characters that you haven't seen in a while. Like, they might just come back up with Tarlok out of the blue because people are, like us, so questioning, even superfans. Like, where did Tarlok become the slime ball? And, I mean, I even have issues with, like, what his ulterior motives are here when he's trying to be the politician, but he's also trapping the Avatar. He's not working with Amon. We know that now. So, like, what's his deal? Like, where is his final goal? Where was that supposed to reach?
Is he, like, trying to get back on his brother's good side? Like, I don't – and he was just, like, teasing it the other way that
he
was going
against Amon. Well,
he didn't know
that Amon was Noatak until – he had his bending taken away. That's what he says.
Oh, right. Then never mind. He's a mystery.
I mean, well, just think about it. Like, why was he, non-benders? He was rallying them up at one point, and that scene doesn't connect now that we have this whole I didn't know he was Amon until I got my bending taken away thing. I don't get why he decided he wanted to be evil to them. Because, I mean, was that just supposed to be just the red herring that we're supposed to just interpret as, oh, okay, so Tarlok's in with Amon. But now that we know that he's not, it's just like, so he's not. Why did you do that?
I wonder if we're just supposed to read him as the typical power-hungry politician who is just trying to grab power wherever he can get it. He gets the task force and has the task force answering to him, and he's just grabbing power wherever he can get it. And Korra was sort of a thing that is outside the law in a lot of ways. So taking her out of the picture takes that threat of being outside of the law to the power grab he was making.
And quite frankly, I can see him looking to still take down Amon if Amon wasn't Noatak. If he still just thought he was just Amon, I think that all that he was saying to the task force that he created with Korra or even the council about, like, Amon's a threat, we need to take him out of our city, I think that's legitimate, because I think he sees the power of benders, unlike Amon, who sees the power of having him being the only bender, you know?
So why do we think Amon / Noatok's whole crusade is equal, quote-unquote, equality, but then he's using bending to take away bending, if we're assuming it's related to his bloodbending somehow? Where do we think that comes from?
I think he wants to be, like, a supreme ruler, like, in the end, because then he's like, oh, well, there are no benders left. I'm the only bender. And then he can just... I think he wants power, too, in a way. You know what I mean? Like, he wants to have that trump card in his back pocket. Like, okay, now no one can bend, and I can bend.
I mean, that's a rather large thing to do on your own. You think he would, like, train, like, Amon Jr., like, hey, kid, let's become, like, extreme blood-bending chi blockers together. Because to have just yourself as the one person that can actually do that, and the rest are just your followers, there's going to have to be the last airbender or hiding an iceberg. Someone's still going to come up and kill you. Like, it doesn't seem like Amon was too smart and then in his execution in the end because he came out too quickly. I think he needed a larger following before he did.
Yeah, but then, like, you're creating more benders to get rid of benders, and it's sort of just, like, a weird double-edged sword. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's just going back on what he's trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, we have to assume that the non-benders outweigh the population of the benders in the Avatar world, because it seems to be a rare and special ability once you can bend, but not, like, so extremely rare.
I think it's pretty equal with benders in the world. I think there's probably a nice equal amount of benders and non-benders.
I don't know. I wonder if Amon / Noatok / that dude's motives. I keep going back to the moment where he bloodbends his father, and I just see that as some kind of turning point for him, because it's just such an intense thing. And I wonder if there's some tie to that moment, because his father's no longer a bender. He had that taken away from him by the Avatar. So I just can't help thinking there's some tie there, but it's hard to put my finger on it, you know?
It's hard. There's a lot of stuff going on with Amon. And as I said before, we got to the reveal of who he is. Brittany, I think you were on last week where I said, even though I know who he is, it doesn't matter because I still don't get a lot of his motivations. And not in a bad story writing kind of way. And more of a, he's just so complicated that it's so hard to know why he's doing what he's doing. Because you barely know anything about him after all of this. This whole story is told from Tarlok's point of view. So you kind of just hear that he used to be a nice guy and then turned very cold. And that's pretty much it. That's all we know about his young personality. And then he's Amon. We're also missing that chunk too. So I think we do need like the 20s, the 30s of Tarlok and Amon. The college years.
Exactly. And we also have to keep in mind, we're hearing this story from Tarlok, so we don't know how reliable his version is, how much he was trying to make himself look good and that sort of thing. He's not a necessarily reliable narrator.
I agree with that a little bit, but I think for the most part he's telling the truth, and I think that was a pretty good representation of what actually did happen, because Tarlok's pretty broken right now. He hasn't really got any big reason to lie as much as he probably did in previous episodes.
Well, he's not necessarily lying, but we all have our own specific lens in how we look at
things. Yeah, that's true.
So just keeping in mind what that specific lens is and having that be our only look into the past is going to be slightly biased no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have any other thoughts about the flashback? We surprised that Yakone had face-changing surgery.
Yeah, wow, that was weird.
Brittany, do you feel that's too much of a deus ex machina, or do you buy into that in this Korra-verse?
I mean, whatever, man. They're so modern now, so why not? this is just an annoying question. Does this radio announcer thing go on the entire series at the beginning of every episode? Because
yes.
I literally cannot stand it anymore.
He does.
Why do you like it as so much?
I don't know. I don't like this whole, oh, we're trying to bring you an update bulletin from the 1920s style that we're going for here. It's just annoying.
Well, the world is kind of 1920s-y.
I know, I don't like that either, but I talked about that in the first episode. My opinion hasn't changed by the finale.
Well, it's gonna stay 1920s-y, so.
Oh, I know. I'm in it now. I'm not gonna complain about it anymore. I just wanted to know if they were like, okay, that's enough of this, meaning the net right. radio announcer guy. But all right, now that I know, I'll accept it and I will move on.
Well, I wrote a note too for the face transplant that I think that the only reason I was able to buy into it, and the only reason I'm able to buy into a lot of the medicine and specifically Korra, is because of the advancements of healing as a waterbender. I think Katara really did a good job of teaching the whole world. See, Katara is just like Boss. She does everything in this series, but all behind the scenes. You don't ever see her doing it. But I feel like she had to have taught people how to really heal waterbending very effectively, and it must have spread to the bad side too, just as much as, you know, the good guys. Because Korra's like, I learned from the best, Katara. And you wouldn't think of Korra being like a healer, but if she's that good, you know, imagine what someone with that innate gift that's more in tune with healing could do. And I guess that's why you're able to just go into surgery and come off with your face completely healed, because they just magic did it on, I guess.
Well, I mean, things that seemed like rare skills in the first series have become a lot more common. Like, the power plant is run by lightning, like right. directing lightning, which was like this big thing for Zuko to learn and accomplish in the first series.
Yeah, but the show still finds it important to say that Bolin can't metal bend. It's not everyone, because it seems like it, because it's a big focus that it almost seems like it's new type of bending, like a fifth outside of all the original four at times. And I think that's important too, that we have a main character that we have Korra that can't blood bend, for instance, and she can't lightning bend as far as we're seeing, or metal bend as far as we're seeing, you know. So I think that you're right, Caitlin. They're a lot more populated. I'm just happy that we're brought back a little bit on the main characters.
Indeed. All right. Any other feels about the flashback before we move on?
I'm glad we know it. It makes me happier that I've seen it all, even if it's not the way I wanted it to all go down, I guess. I wanted bigger motivations, but it's better than nothing.
All right. So these last two episodes are, besides this flashback, are a significant amount of just action, and more action. So one of the big parts of the action in this episode, we have General Iroh arriving with his forces and immediately starting to get blown to smithereens. So was it kind of naive to think that there wouldn't be some kind of trap in the water, as Mitch commented in the doc?
I don't know if it was naive. Oh, sorry, Brittany, you go.
Oh, I was going to say, I think it was, just because I think that they were so overwhelmed that they're just like, okay, clearly we can just, this is our best option at this point. But they should have known that.
Well, I'm actually going naive. I just thought that they seem well prepared. They just don't think they were prepared enough for like the water. They were all like waiting for big airships and tanks to like get them. So I think they probably should have been smarter to realize that there could be stuff on the water. They did not think this through enough, but I don't think it's necessarily naive.
They had to scramble pretty quickly.
Yeah. I mean, if that's all they can do, that's all they can do.
It did give us that like wonderful Little Mermaid scene though, where Korra like scoops up Iroh. I was like, oh gosh, this is great.
The Avatar rescuing the damsel in distress.
Oh, so good.
And we see a lot of things going on, because there's lots of things blown up. There are distinct parachutes in a lot of these explosions. So just a reminder, this is a kid's show, and we can't have people getting killed, at least until the very end of the finale. Until we save it up for the big one next episode.
I feel like it's like a PG-13 movie where you can only say like an F-bomb like once, you know, and then that's just, you're still PG-13. But if you say it one more time, you're R. I feel like if they killed any more people in this show, in this season, that wouldn't even air to Nickelodeon. They'd be like, I'm sorry, rewrite your story. Do not give this to us.
Yeah, I definitely thought about that. I was like, oh, look, everyone has gone to their safety lessons before taking off in these planes.
And it almost takes me out of the realism because of how pointed the camera has to be on it, because you know that there's a sensor at Nickelodeon saying, hey, we have to see very clearly that person in that exploding plane for the 15th time in this action scene had like 2 seconds of falling down. Like, you have to see it.
Well, this isn't the first time. The whole big battle in the Day of Black Sun made very sure to show people, like, coming out of the tanks that were blowing up and everything. So,
yeah.
We have precedent for that.
But I feel like Korra, as it goes on, will start killing people that are civilian and not care as much. I really do. It's not going to show them dying, but it's definitely not going to show them with their parachute. There are people that will just die in explosions, etc. Like, I think that the show gets more lax as it goes on. That might lead on to why it goes online eventually, as opposed to being aired on Nickelodeon. Wouldn't you agree, Caitlin and Jack?
Is this a prediction, Mitch, or a spoiler?
Well, I'll leave it. I'll let it be open.
I don't know. All I'm going to say is that I watched Rugrats in Paris the other day, and they had people blowing up in cars, so I'm just going to leave that right there.
Like the giant reptile exploding and stopping on top of
like
people.
Like reptiles, like, kicking cars around, and they'd smash into each other, and they would have died, but Rugrats is crazy, so.
And
no, the death tolls are definitely racking up.
I'm not even going to ask, Jack.
The death tolls are definitely racking up in Korra a lot quicker than they would in Atla, because we have machinery that can explode and machinery that can kill.
Speaking of, Brittany, how did you feel seeing, like, an all-out battle with, like, ships and all the air tanks and everything going on in the Avatar world? Was this surprising?
Yeah, it was weird. Like, I wanted more bending. Like, I feel like Kitch was just like, okay, bend to give us some, like, fuel, or just fire these little fireballs off the side while our tanker explodes, like, and launches missiles. I'm like, that's not cool. I like the bending choreography so much, so.
Yeah.
I hope they don't focus on machinery in every battle, but if they do, again, I'll get over it.
That was very Eeyore.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think for that reason, like, with all the machinery and stuff, is why when Mako and Korra started doing their firebending in sync to get Aman, though that looked so badass because it was the first time we'd seen that in this episode, like that beautiful choreography of bending.
Yeah, exactly. When they were like going after him, I was like, yes, okay, good. We're gonna battle some bending here. And then he like does like that giant like cyclone thing in the water, and it was really cool. And I'm like, yeah, bending.
Yeah, it's nice that the focus and the next episode that we're leading into is going to have a lot of Mako Korra versus Aman stuff, because that it feels like the show wouldn't have done itself justice if it just kept it to this plane exploded, then mines hit the ships, and I don't know, General Iroh was the hero and took down every last airplane. You know, like that wouldn't have felt like the epic battles that we're used to.
All right, so the last main thing going on in this episode is the crew is hanging out with the hobo that Korra met when she first got to Republic City, and he shares his gruel that is very amazing from all the dumpsters that he's been stealing food out of. So we've got some group dynamics going on here. Mako continues to be awful, and Korra, and there's a whole drama there with Asami, and Iroh's trying to figure out what to do with, because he's lost a whole bunch of men, so he sends out a message to who, Brittany?
Boomy! I'm so excited!
I thought of you as soon as he said it.
That was funny. And we didn't get a description of him too, Britt. Are you excited? At this point of your watch, are you excited to see what he looks like, or are you like...
No, you saw him. Oh, we see him in the next episode.
Yeah, I'm talking like watching episode 11. What was your anticipation for what this Boomy was going to look like?
Well, I have no idea. Well, I was like, well, okay. He's definitely not... They're not going to make him just like Boomy. But then I saw him in episode 11, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. He is... I guess it comes with the name. I don't know. But he is going
to
be...
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, they wouldn't have waited until he was, like, 10 years old to name him Boomy if they can see that he's crazy.
Yeah.
Or did he just, like, or is it the name? Like, when you're given that name, you grow up to be insane.
Yeah, it's like an Avatar thing. Like, he just, like, Aang looked at him and was like, Boomy, and then his, like, eyes glowed and he went crazy. Like, that had to be it.
Like, I don't know. I don't think you get named Azula thinking that you'll be a peaceful child. That's a very harsh-sounding name.
So what did we think about just the group dynamics underground while they're waiting to make their moves? And they eventually decide to split up with Mako and Korra going one way and the rest of the team going off another way.
I thought that was smart, and I like that Iroh didn't get dragged into all of their, at this point, to me at least, very obnoxious, annoying romantic problems. I just want it to die. Like, I'm so tired of Asami being miserable and giving these longing looks at their, like, at Mako. I'm like, all right, we got to get over this. It's dragging me down. I want to kick some butt and watch the bending and not look at you all sad the whole time.
And it's kind of sucky because it feels like Asami, in my opinion, had, like, the smallest role in all of this. And I think that she'd been built up to be such a more acrobatic fighter that she could have done a more one-on-one battle. But in the next episode, we're going to see what she does. And it disappointed me because it felt like, yeah, Brittany, her drama was supposed to be the main element. It was supposed to be, oh God, Korra is taking away Mako from me. And I don't like that the romance had to be her main plot when she was just so badass.
Yeah,
I mean, it's arguable that her dad's was the main plot, but it was such a B plot. It had such little screen time that I barely even notice it.
It's incredibly unnecessary that I feel like that the creators wanted to do that because they've got a more mature show with an older cast, so that they, by nature, you have to have some kind of drama with romance, which I don't necessarily agree with, but that's how I feel like that was their thought process.
I just continue appreciating that Asami never gets angry at Korra. She's always directing her ire at Mako, which is where it is deserved.
That is definitely a huge plus, but it could be done without altogether.
Well, she does have that moment in Extreme Meets when they're in the car chasing after the Equalist, and then Asami like focuses the rearview mirror on Korra that I am kind of bothered by because I'm like, I don't know if this is Korra's fault. Mike Mako's leading her on, girl. Like, back off.
Well, she kind of focused on the pair of them.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. I think I was thinking, you know, I was thinking that it was more focused on Korra. Well, yeah, anyways.
Mako's the worst. That's all.
I mean, he is. He's a really great bender. I'll give him that. He's a good protector. But depends on who he cares to protect that day.
Very true. All right. Do we have any more feels about this episode, or should we move on to scenes and lines?
There's a big thing happening in the next episode that I can't wait to get to. So
yeah, there's a lot of big things happening in the next
episode. No, there's one that Brittany's been waiting for that I've waited so long for this.
All right, well then let's move on to scenes and lines. Jack, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was specifically in the flashbacks, the Tarlok's big backstory. I like seeing how he had complete refusal to bloodbend. Because I don't know, it just goes sort of with what I said before, how I don't generally I get a little bit sick of like having to care about the, you know, the villains and getting this big sob backstory, but I feel like it was handled really, really well. And yeah, I just like seeing him stand up for himself and stand up for his father, and then his brother sort of defend him as well. And no, it was cool.
Awesome. Brittany?
When Iroh mentions that Commander Bumi is an actual person who is coming to the show.
Amazing. And Mitch.
Mine's that really big cyclone that Korra makes. It's epic for like a minute, and then a plane runs into it and kind of ruins it. But it was that sweeping like Avatar music that always plays whenever Korra's like super Avataring out. And it's so epic. I love her cyclones. I love that she uses those so frequently too.
Awesome. And mine comes not long after when Korra continues waterbending like a boss and she rescues General Iroh because he was going to drown. So she's like, I should probably go save him. And he immediately knows who she is and thanks her for saving his life. So girl power rescuing the general. So go Korra.
/ Prince Eric. Brittany, I can't unsee that.
It's so good. It's just, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, aw.
Part of his world, yeah.
All right, Jack, what was your favorite line?
So mine was a part in the flashback again. It was Noah Tuck talking to his dad. He says, you say bloodbending is the most powerful thing in the world, but it's not. The Avatar is. He took your bending away, but what could be more powerful than that? And there's not really any reason why there's not like a specific reason why I really like this line. I don't know why I did. I just thought it was really cool.
It seems like it ties into those mysterious motivations in the way that's, like,
in your periphery. Like, I see that there's probably a connection, and I can't quite get it there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Brittany, favorite line?
Mine was when Bolin, like, you know, there's like this, all this crap going on and stuff blowing up everywhere. And Bolin just goes, "Where does Hiroshi find the time to keep inventing new evil machines?" Because it's just so overwhelming at that moment. And it just like breaks the scene and provides a little bit of comic relief. And I loved it.
I liked that one too. Mitch?
So mine's the moment where you feel like you finally have gotten into the Korra characters enough to not remember, like, consistently that everyone you love is dead. And then Iroh goes, "My grandfather will respect the Avatar's instinct, so will I." That has hit you with Zuko. Both Zuko and Aang in the same sentence with Dante Bisco's voice, and it was too much. Cried so much at that line.
Ugh, that's the line I wanted, and it was gone when I got into the dock.
I know. I should have not eaten dinner and gotten into the dock, because I thought about that too.
That's funny.
Alright, and my favorite line was Bolin, when they're all sitting underground and the hobo is sharing food with them, and Bolin said, the hobo's been talking about how all the people in his network of hobos, like, isn't into all the equalist stuff, and Bolin goes, "You are a wise and noble hobo." Like,
just so humble. Like,
I just love the delivery. It's so good.
Yeah.
All right. Finale of book one. Endgame. Are we ready?
I prepared, yes.
All right. In this chapter, Korra and Mako attempt to reveal Noatak during a rally to rid the world of the last airbenders. After a suspenseful Jurassic Park Raptors kitchen scene, Korra's bending is taken away in horrific fashion. Amon's lieutenant backstabs his leader, but the non-bender is crumpled into a blood-bended corpse. Mako takes the opportunity to shock the living hell out of that mofo, and Korra unlocks the ability to airbend. Noatak, the waterbender, is revealed to the world, effectively ending the Equalist Uprising. Asami defeats her father in a mecha suit battle, while Iroh takes down the remaining Equalist airplanes. At long last, estranged brothers Noatak and Tarlok head off to make a new double suicide. At the end, the Southern Water Tribe, even Katara, can't undo the negative effects of Amon's bloodbending. Frustrated, Korra denies Asami's Bae's love, and suddenly unlocks her Avatar spiritual connections. Aang grants her back her bending abilities, along with the means to heal all affected by Amon's bloodbending. Makora sails, Lin bends, Korra can enter the Avatar state, and Asami is left with nothing. It's such a good ending, like, upbeat ending, and Mitch's synopsis is like, and
I cry many a tear for Asami. I really do.
That was really depressing, Mitch. Thank you. All right, so this episode also had lots of action. So let's start with the rally. So Mako and Korra now know the truth behind Amon, so they go to the rally to basically tell the truth about who Amon is and hope to undermine all his followers' trust in him. And Amon, he's not real worried about that. So, Brittany, what did you think when he took his mask off?
That his scar was real this time.
What about that weird curled lip he had going on? Like, does he have like some kind of gum like stuffed up there, like tobacco? Like, what's he doing all day? I don't know how he has it like that. It really just maybe he gets it ready just when he takes off the mask. Like, he snarls a little bit, you know?
Yeah, he's like, "My face is so ugly. Don't look at me."
Oh god, but it's so Phantom of the Opera. It is so Phantom of the Opera.
I don't know. I liked the rally part because I was like, what is his end game? I'm like, what? Oh, end game. That's the name of this episode. but I was like, what is he doing by provoking them? And like, why aren't they beating him to a pulp right now already? And then Mako finally relieves all the tension by just shooting some fire at him. So
how badass was it when they were running against the wall with the fire, like pushing them up? That was so badass.
It was like Iron Man. Like, unlocked. And they were like, it was so cool.
I love when people use their firebending for more than just explosion-y power, but more for like jet propulsion, like Azula does when she's falling off of the blimp and she's able to just kind of go over to the wall and like slide on it and save herself. Or just even the jetpacks that General Iroh's using in these episodes too, where he just kind of like shoots out of his hands, and it's so like seamless, you know, and it just looks so cool. I would love to be every single one of the bendings for specific reasons. The fire bending is so I could fly like that. That'd be so much fun.
Yeah, this episode, I remember I took any Avatar, like, which bender are you quiz that I could find when we were watching Avatar. And I really wanted air so badly, but every single one of them came out as firebending. And I'm like, you know what? I can, like, jettison myself off a cliff and not die, so I'm cool with this now.
Yeah.
Plus, after the lightning bending came into play, I was like, all right, this is cool.
I'm
glad to be a firebender.
Joe Schmo can do it.
Yeah.
All right, so the rally takes a bad turn when Amon reveals that he has got the Air family captive. Ugh, shocker. Brittany, what'd you think?
Well, watching the kids was really sad. Like, seeing all of them tied up. And of course, Tenzin, because Tenzin just looks so sad. But, yeah, I didn't expect that at all. I knew that he would probably do something by threatening the last airbenders, but I didn't think that it would be in this drastic of a fashion. Plus, another airbender was, like, about to be born, so what were they going to do?
It's always so sad to see, like, Tenzin helpless and hurt, because it's always, like, that big fatherly figure, like Dumbledore. Like, when Dumbledore's, like, hurt and defenseless, like, you really feel... like, really, really, it's really uncomfortable, and it was like that with Tenzin.
Yeah, you get a little scared, even though you're not there. You're like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
like,
if Amon can take him down, then, like, what's stopping him with everyone else?
Yeah.
And how sad is it, too, that Lin's sacrifice was for nothing?
That's what I was about to say, yeah.
Lin.
She lost her bending, and Tenzin still got caught. Oh, Lin!
It's almost like you could just say, like, no matter how hard she tries to, like, show that she's a better person than Pema, she's always going to lose.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Mitch just Pema's wants to keep hating on Pema. Okay. She's not even in the episode, but let's keep hating.
She's mentioned. That's enough. That's all I needed to hear.
Yeah. Also, Adiana would like Mitch to know that... Mako is nothing like the perfection that is Azula, because he mentioned that Mako uses the lightning much like Azula does.
Right, she just, like, shoots it out, he does, because it's kind of, like, out of nowhere, because, like, it's in the middle of the rally, and Amon's like, I am evil, listen to me talk evilly. Mako's just like, screw this. Bam! I love it.
But Azula's still better.
Yeah, Azula is better than Mako. He would definitely lose against Azula, there's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. Most people would lose against Azula.
As they should. I love her. I love her.
Well, speaking of firebenders, Korra did a lot of firebending in this episode, and she and Mako had a pretty good dynamic working. Did we like seeing them working together in all this?
I did, especially because I just like watching firebending, and when they were, like, in sync, it looked beautiful. I love the choreography for firebending. So, I liked it.
I had to agree that the choreography for firebending feels the most intense and powerful, understandably so, from how it looks. And it's very quick juts, like the little punches they do out, you know, when Mako's trying to, like, catch someone and, like, just keep on punching back and forth. I love that. It's so cool. That's how I would firebend. I would just kind of, like... not to kill someone, but I would just, like, punch out into the sky to make pretty colors, like, make fireworks or something.
See?
You really are the laziest Avatar. You're like, I'm going to make some pretty fireworks for everyone's enjoyment while I lie here on my air bison.
With free Wi-Fi.
See, seeing, like, Korra and Mako work together so well, like, just reminds me how much I do not give a crap about their romantic stuff. Like, I'd much rather replace all the romantic plotline with them just training and just, like, having beautiful choreography, just fighting against each other, you know? There does not even have to be a story. Just do that.
Or maybe she would give the person who's not already in a relationship and or is pining after your attention a chance. Like, she barely gave Bolin anything more than just, like, you're cute, I don't like you. I don't know, like, don't string him along, but give him more than one date. And it's just, it's so sad that that's not explored here, as opposed to just Mako is, like, her adoration, like, the man you can't get. He's nothing that special. Like, I know he's awesome, like I said, at protecting, but he's not a good person, like, at all. He never treats her with respect until he needs her for something. It sucks.
It's the hair, man.
I think he's a good person. I just don't think that, like, it's just, yeah. He's not a bad person. There's just nothing special about him.
He's a teenage boy. That's what I think. He acts like a teenage boy.
I feel like I've heard you say that sentence like 20,000 times on Glee Chat, Caitlin.
Yeah.
And it still is relevant.
Yeah. And you're right, Brittany. I mean, his hair gives him good points. Like, that flip-flop thing he has going on, yeah.
Well, Amon thinks he's pretty badass.
I know. What a badge of honor.
Comment on that.
How freaking cool is it that, like, the bad guy would say something like that to, like, our street rat, you know? It's almost like Jafar saying to Aladdin, like, you're a challenge. You're a real good challenge. And it makes me so happy because the villains are so high and mighty in themselves.
Now I've got Riff Raff straight.
I don't buy that.
Okay, so we have two main, like, showdowns that go on once the airbenders have been freed. We've got Amon kind of takes out Korra and Mako and then fights his lieutenant because his lieutenant saw him bloodbending and he's like, WTF, traitor. Like, you're supposed to be a non-bender, excuse you. So, Brittany, did you think the lieutenant died?
Yeah, just because I guess I kind of, when I moved into this episode, I already had forgotten about the parachutes. So I was like, oh, okay, so we're just killing people, that's fine. Because I'm in the older mindset where it wouldn't have been a big deal in my head. So I was just like, yeah, sure, he's probably dead.
I want that to be our new hashtag, the parachutes.
So it was a little clearer than Jets. That's
yeah, I like that this GIF is in here.
Oh, I live by that GIF. You can ask anyone on Glee Chat. Jack and Caitlin know that I live by that GIF.
Yeah, it's the GIF that's just like, did Jet just die? And Sokka's like, you know, it was really unclear.
It's the GIF that keeps on giving.
From, like, the best episode ever.
Oh, when I got to that episode, I was so excited. I, like, made a snack and, like, settled in to watch it. Because you guys had talked it up the whole series.
Yeah, that episode still, like, keeps me going. Like, if there's ever a moment in Atla when I'm rewatching it or Korra where I'm trying to get through it or whatever, I just think back to this episode. I'm like, no, these creators know what they're doing. Like, they're so self-aware, and they know what they have to do. Like, they know about the parachutes, okay?
Whenever there's something a little iffy, I'm like, let's just keep flying.
Yes, please. Oh, God, Caitlin.
So let's just keep flying from there. So the other big confrontation is Amon and Korra. And Korra's bending goes bye-bye. Uh-oh. Brittany, what were your initial reactions to that?
My initial reaction is exactly what Ariana broke into the dock and wrote. I thought that the next three books were literally going to be Korra having to get back her bending. I was like, well, this is it. This is where the series is going to go. We're going to have to work on fire in one chapter. And all this, I'm like, all right, I'm ready for it. I'm down for a challenge. Because the big bad is kind of gone. Even though that happens later, I still thought that, like, I was like, okay, well, this is where we're heading, that she has to master all of the elements and train. And I got excited. I started, like, working myself up to, I'm like, yes, okay, we're going to watch her train because we missed all of her firebending training and waterbending training. And I'm like, all right, this is going to be so good. She's going to have to get new masters and it's going to be great. And Zuko's going to come back and train her in firebending. And that didn't happen.
I'm so glad that that's not what they chose to do. Because maybe it's just knowing what they do, but, like, some of the themes they handle in the later seasons are so good. And I'm so much more glad that we got that as opposed to, like, a rehash of the storyline we already got in Atla.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you newbies would be excited to have the same exact plot structure.
We know what we like. We like watching that ending.
She would have been an airbender doing it, too, since she unlocks her airbending.
Yeah. Oh, it would have been great. It was like Aang 2.0.
It really would have been.
Oh, I would not have liked that.
that's a good thing we didn't go down that path.
Well, now I'm excited,
it would have worked because
no
we have four books as opposed to three, because we have three in Atla.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. Hmm.
It's still a shorter series, though.
Yeah, by a little bit, because the books are shorter. There was one moment that I really wanted to talk about, Caitlin, like with Amon chasing after them and how we know that he now like is moving the benders, manipulating their bodies so that the bending doesn't hit him, right? Is that what we're meant to understand? That's how he's dodging everything?
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Well, that's what they said, and I didn't remember it. And it just kind of like almost flew over my head. Because I think Mako goes, how can we go up against this guy? And Korra's like, well, we can. He's going to just move our – he's going to like manipulate us so that he can get hit by any of our bending. And that makes me think back to like when Korra was escaping from Tarlok's little like basement prison and she tries to hit him with all those like icicles. But I guess that he must have manipulated – you know what I mean? Like or the fire blast, the pro-bending arena that she shoots up into the airship. I think he's always like slightly moving everyone. But there's a moment here where he jumps through a firewall that Korra creates and he just does it. It's just magic. There's nothing else to it. It makes me feel like he's a firebender secretly too. I don't even know.
Well, he's also a waterbender, so – he can still bend water, so like icicles, he could.
That's a good point. I always forget that he's a waterbender at that scene. But how about maybe he was using water in the environment to create a little like patch of air where there was no fire anymore. I could buy into that. Yeah. Sweat bending, yeah.
I mean, what? If he can.
What'd you say?
You remember the whole sweat bending thing when Katara had to get out of
prison? I thought you said something else. They said slut bending. I was like, what the hell? Like, I was listening, and I just heard that. I was like, maybe I just like zoned out for a sec there.
It's the American accent,
Jack. I don't
think
I can make that the title of this episode, so we'll
do it. I want to.
So, let's just keep flying. So, Brittany, what was your reaction when Korra firebended? She's doing that a lot. Airbended for the first time.
I was like, well, that girl unlocked all of her chakras really quickly because she did not have to go through like 7 or 8 steps to get there. She unlocked one and then all of a sudden she's just like, I guess she was in such distress or whatever that she was able to unlock the rest of them and she was like, bam, I can airbend now. But it looked really cool and I'm pumped for her.
So what do we think about the fact that like Amon just like quit when she started airbending, like didn't even like care anymore. He was like, I'm defeated. You know, I found that really specific that for both Tenzin and Korra to be able to hit him with airbending and he's just like, ow.
I don't know. Maybe he started thinking about his dad going up against Aang and like rethought his plan. He was like, wait a minute. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Even though he's still a jerk. It doesn't make him any better for not doing it.
Right. I mean, well, whatever it was, I think that it might be something to the effect of he's not used to, I don't know, manipulating the bodies of people who can airbend because he hasn't had a lot of airbenders to fight against, if any at all.
My interpretation was more, sorry, Jack, that
there you go.
Like he was so shocked that she found a way to bend anything after what he had done that
right.
It's sort of like, what else can she do? Oh, God, like if she can unlock that after I've taken her bending, what else?
Yeah,
like,
because
I need to regroup.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, yeah.
And he's like a superhuman, the way he can bend, and that Tarlok's bloodbending barely stopped him, and he was able to just keep going. And regardless of whether or not he's wearing a mask, who his persona is, it's Amon, it's Noatak, that's still a really, really giant achievement that he's able to just pretty much walk normally while someone's trying to bloodbend you. He has an extreme power, and that's why I think he has this cockiness that strut over to the bloodbender. You know, he doesn't care that, for instance, his brother is trying to like kill him. He will walk on over and take his bending. And also, right here, he's probably like, Avatar, Shmavatar, going to kill his friend, or effectively kill his friend, her friend in the meantime too, and it'll be no big deal. So I can see that it's kind of like, oh my God, she really just did that. How did I overlook that? I'm so smart. I'm Voldemort. I thought of all the plans. How did you beat me, Harry?
Well, and she overcomes his bloodbending again too. Like,
oh yeah,
she takes over like all his tricks. Like she's shown a way that his taking away bending isn't useful. Doesn't work on her anymore, and then his bloodbending doesn't work on her anymore. That's all his good tricks. Like, uh-oh.
And it's funny because there's a chain of events that works out to allow people to fight against his bloodbending. He's distracted first that he wants to kill Lieutenant, so he's not paying as much attention to Mako, so Mako can just get his fingers together. And then he shocks him, I think, enough to weaken him so that it's still that he's still able to bloodbend, yeah, but not as strong as he would have been before, and that's why Korra's able to fight it in the end.
Yeah, and like, and the cherry on top of everything you guys just said is that the fact that then everyone sees him bending. So, like, the Korra and that were telling the truth, and it's just the final blow to his defeat.
Yeah.
Like, all yeah, buffered that by really, everything you guys just said.
That really had to happen, because if there had still been people believing in him and being like, oh, the Avatar's lying, she's trying to oppress us and oppress our leader, he could have regrouped somehow. But because they see that he is a fraud, that means his movement must be a fraud, that completely takes everything away from him, so it removes his threat entirely.
Yeah, and he has no one coming in looking for him for backup. Like, he can't just wait for reinforcements anymore.
I'm almost surprised he didn't really have a firebender, like, burn his face just to make this, like, whole thing look so much more real. That's how psychotic he is to me.
No, but then it makes my paint seem more valid for confusing it for paint in Avatar.
Can I just say that I was thinking, when you said that way back in the beginning of Atla, I was like, she's not going to know what to think when there's actual paint. Like, you're never going to trust anything ever again.
I'd be like, oh, she's painted on. He's clearly not injured. Just wipe it off.
Your scar's on the wrong side, Amon. Come on.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about the elephant in the room and a blowing up boat and two people on it. Brittany, what did you think when that happened?
I was like, well, I guess the creators of Korra really thought that they weren't coming back, so they had to kill them. So that the threat of Amon just wasn't out there anymore. I definitely think that they're both dead. Because, I mean, at this point, what is Tarlok going to do? He can't go back to Republic City. He'd have to, like, live on the run. And then he doesn't really want to live with his brother, I don't think. So,
or just get another face transplant. Like, follow your father's footsteps.
Yeah,
whatever.
Just get some face transplants. Start working I'm sure for they have some Corp and, like, work your way up.
Only. I'm sure they have some gang connections. Like, the Republic City gang that's keeping your cone going.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think they're dead.
Were you shocked that that was a thing that happened?
Yeah, I was like, oh, what's the end game here? And then when I saw Tarlok, like, kind of, like, reach around for something, I'm like, oh, no. I didn't think that they were going to... I thought they would just, like, sail off into the sunset, but it made sense that they killed themselves. But still, it's like a Y7 show, like you wrote here. Like,
I mean, it was kind of a murder-suicide rather than a double-suicide, because Noatak wasn't in on it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it wasn't like a double suicide as much as what you said, Caitlin. Because when you guys were talking, I was like, maybe I misread it. Maybe like they had both planned to both go out there.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And
I understand that it can be interpreted both ways, because I've also had discussions with Mikal, and I think her and I decided a while ago that this was a double suicide from the tear that goes down Noatak's face, where he knows, like, he senses it and he doesn't stop it. He has all the ability to. He could throw him off the boat if he wanted to. He has all the water around him. I think it's totally up to interpretation on purpose, because it's perhaps even worse to make this a double suicide than just a murder suicide. I think that interpretation has to be left in just so that this could even air Nickelodeon, because this is such an intense thing to have happen. I can't imagine this happening in Atla. This would not happen in Atla. This show took a big leap forward in terms of maturity.
I've never read it as a double suicide. That's interesting that you say it I read that tear as him being like his emotion towards starting over with his brother and going into a new life, and then like, boom, dead.
Kind of like shooting Lenny in the back of the head deal. Like, I can see that too from a Mice and Men kind of deal. It's like, oh, we're going off into the sunset, Lenny, boom, gone. but another thing is, too, that I feel that innately with bloodbending, you can kind of sense the blood around you and where it's moving and what it's doing, because you can probably sense bodies of water and earth, and you're probably connected to all that, you know? So I feel like he could have sensed what was happening, like seeing his brother in his bending eye doing what he was doing.
I don't know. I think he'd have his guard down with his brother behind him. Like, if he didn't really trust him, he wouldn't have wanted him behind him.
Yeah, and it's weird because it's like, why would they get together? I know that's like they're all that they have left, but like you just took away your brother's bending, and you expect him to be like all cheery with you. Of course, he's gonna hate you.
Jack,
I don't think
he cares
what they think. Oh yeah, I don't think like Nortok cares what Taluk thinks if he's gonna kill him. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, it doesn't matter because they're gonna be both dead. I know that sounds morbid, but yeah.
Jack, this is extremely morbid. There's no other way to hit it. Trust me. I've looked. This is it. And I think there was an infamous moment in Nickelodeon. I'll lighten up the mood a bit. Caitlin, this is kind of like a meme for Korra after this moment, but there was a SpongeBob ad playing. You know, like, coming up next is SpongeBob. Oh, yeah. And when the explosion happens, SpongeBob is shown doing his laughing animation in the bottom right corner as it explodes, as the boat explodes.
That's
like, ha ha ha, they're dead. Yes. So it's weird. I wonder if that was planned.
And there's one as well where there's like something going on in SpongeBob and then Korra's the one laughing.
Right, like something horrible to him. Yeah, and she'll be like, my turn.
Oh dear. Okay, well, the other part of the episode involves the rest of the crew dealing with the rest of the invasion of Amon's peeps. So you've got Asami taking on her father. You've got Iroh single-handedly taking down a whole bunch of planes because he's a BAMF and like his grandfather. So there's a whole lot going on. So we were saying earlier, some of us were not impressed with the Asami stuff.
AKA
Mitch.
Me.
Oh. And
Yeah, no. I liked this scene, though. I was glad that she went after her father and had those, like, that moment of realization, like, nothing is really ever going to change, like, with him. So, and then Bolin was there, and I thought that they made a great team. I'm glad that they were paired together, because then there's nothing lingering there, and they could just both kick ass, and she actually had, like, a lot of heart in her character come through in that scene, and I really, really liked it for her.
Yeah,
I think I would have felt better here if we had Asami Mako and then we had Korra Bolin, just fighting.
No, I disagree.
Because I would be happier seeing Mako saying like, I don't care our romantic differences. I know this is important to you, and I'm going to help you out. But he picked Korra. He said, I'm going with you, and that he chose to protect her over Asami. Asami is in just as much danger, if not more, because she can't bend, or maybe less. I don't know, because you're not going to.
Yeah, but I think Asami needed to do it herself, and if she had Mako there, Mako would have been a distraction. Not so much, even if it wasn't romantically, it's more like he's trying to be the one to end it, as opposed to her having to end it. And Bolin is like, he's great at what he does, but he's just like distracted enough by battling other things that she could take care of what she needs to do.
Yeah, and that storyline does not need to be influenced by, like, the romance drama. Like, it's got a lot to do with Asami dealing with her own personal issues with her family, her father, completely outside, got nothing to do with anyone else in the gang, in the crew. But Bolin there is just a nice supportive friend and buffer just to help out in any way that he can, but it's mainly Asami doing what she needs to do.
I think what kills me in this scene is that there is a moment when Hiroshi very nearly kills her. Like, that is your daughter.
Oh, yeah.
And you nearly killed her. So the fact that he survives, she just knocks him out, basically. So it's going to be very hard for her, I feel like, to forget that he tried to kill her.
Well, how about the part where her eyes are fluttering and you feel that emotion? It's, oh my God, there's no other way to animate that. But how they did it, so spot on. Because they have her eyes kind of like flickering. You know when you're like so angry, you want to cry, and you're just so upset at someone that you want to just yell at them and you don't know what to say? She's at that. The animation just hits that so well. And she looks like she's contemplating not even just killing him, but just hurting him really badly and just saying like, I can't believe you would try and kill me. How dare you? I feel so betrayed. I know we're fighting, but this is all kind of just fun and games, Dad. Don't try and kill me. And it was such an intense emotion. I did like that little part there. I really did.
So that was intense, but Asami wins because she's a good guy. And then we've got Iroh. What did we think of Iroh being like a one-man wrecking crew?
He's so cool. Like, I mean, it's weird that he has Zuko's voice, but he is just the person I need in addition to this season.
It's just so distinct, the voice. There's no other way you can associate it, like, not being Zuko.
Or Rufio.
Well, I think this also really shows why Iroh was the youngest general in United Forces history. Like, that's worth noting that he is. He's a badass in a lot of ways, and we see when he's taking down planes and all this, but single-handed, there's a reason why.
And he was clearly raised by a good family line, because he's not power-hungry or crazy. He's leading a United Forces. Oh,
I'm going to start crying. My God.
Yeah. General Iroh gets me there, too.
It just hits me every single time I think about Zuko naming his kid Iroh. Oh, God. Or his grandkid, whatever.
Yeah.
Or his kids know Iroh well enough to want to name their...
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
Well, Iroh was just such an awesome legend, you know? Like, he basically got the Red Lotus back together, and he decided to betray his brother, the Fire Lord, which is a big, very big deal, and he
was... Mitch?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. White Lotus, Caitlin. Thank you. That's okay, Caitlin. I know what you're talking about, but White Lotus. Yes, I'll leave it at that.
Just stop.
Yeah, stop talking.
Boomy's here. That was Let's talk about Boomy.
Yeah.
Boomy.
Talk about Boomy, Brittany.
Well, I didn't think that we were going to see him because I feel like he's a myth. And then finally... shows up. Yeah, because like they were like, we'll just send like this message. And I knew a Boomy was coming. I just didn't know when or where or what he would be or who he would be or how he was connected to anyone. And then when Tenzin says that it's his brother, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing I've ever could imagine.
He named his child Boomy.
I know. It's so great. Plus, I was a little disappointed that my original thought that Boomy just survived forever on crystals and did like a Benjamin Button type thing and just like went backwards in age didn't happen. But that's okay, because this
Boomy, I mean, how are you to know that he didn't?
I don't know. I'll have to find out in the next episode.
Could you imagine not knowing if there was a second season after this? Because this was, for the creators, all they knew that they had. They thought they had these 12 and that was done. Like, bam.
I still think that like if it ended after this, it would have still been a satisfying ending of sorts.
It wraps up nicely.
Yeah, you could tell that they weren't sure.
This ending, I always feel, I guess this is partially a separate discussion, but that this last episode is really quickly paced, like almost too quickly. And I really feel like they could have cut some of the love triangle stuff out earlier in the season to make room to let some of the stuff in this last couple of episodes breathe a little bit. So that was just something that bothered me a little on the first time I watched it.
Yeah, definitely. Like, that's where I feel like we could have had Hiroshi's storyline completely wrapped up before this episode. Even in episode 11, that'd have been cool. We spent such a long time on the backstory, which was arguably necessary, that we didn't have time to fit anything else in these final episodes. I feel like they gave too much to that, and you're right, the love triangles, to really give us the breath that we needed to see the plots they were starting conclude.
So especially the fast-paced stuff comes in this very end, so let's talk about this. So we've got relationship drama, ugh, Mako, let's just move on.
Yeah,
and then
we're over it.
So Korra's like...
Can I just say, Brittany, wait until season two. Wait until season two.
Mitch, stop talking. okay, so let's get to the good stuff. Korra goes off by herself, and... who should appear? Not Tenzin.
Aang!
Oh my God.
It was very emotional. Like, I didn't cry, but it was just, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm actually going to hear him talk, and he's going to be there, and he's like, there he is. This is what I missed when he wasn't, you know, dead.
Do we like that Aang gives her her powers back? Like, what's the feeling there? Or
the fact
does
that he did it, or that he was the one that did it?
I mean, that he does it. There are some complaints that it's kind of Deus Ex.
Yeah, it
there.
Is. Mm. But, I mean, if they had to wrap it up, they had to wrap it up. So, if you didn't want to leave Korra with just airbending, then I guess it makes sense. But yeah. I was just happy to see Aang, to be honest. I was happy that he was the one who did it, because I think that he's been trying, as we know, he's been trying to get through to her this whole season so far. And she finally unlocked enough to, like, connect with the spirit world. And I'm glad that she now has that connection with the spirit world and can do all that stuff. Although, I wish it was kind of... Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I wish it was a lion turtle, because I want them to be explained. I still don't get it.
Lion turtle magic.
Yeah.
Do we like seeing the other avatars behind Aang?
Yeah, I mean, awesome. Yeah, whatever. But Aang was the focus. So.
I thought it was badass having everyone behind him.
Yeah, no, it was cool, but I just wanted to see Aang.
I really want to see Korra and Kiyoshi talk. Like, I think that'd be amazing.
That'd be awesome.
If you look, there's a really funny looking one that looks like Jafar from Aladdin, as long as we're talking about Aladdin so much. It's like distinctly Jafar. It's hilarious.
All right, so let's keep flying. And then, so Korra gets her powers back, and then she comes back, because we're just going to not talk about Mako and Korra at all. And she gives Lin her powers back. Lin can bend again.
Yay, Lin.
So, happy, yay, good things, joy.
Yeah. Although I do like, I'm assuming this is Ariana as well, she said that she wanted to see what my bae Lin work out living life as a superhero who lost her powers. That could have been cool. But I'm glad that she has her bending back, because that was like a huge part of her identity. And then, yes, I agree with her on this point. The look in Tenzin's eyes when she was earthbending again. They're meant to be. I'm into it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what's funny here? I remember this scene playing out differently. I've watched this finale like 5 times. I don't know how I got it wrong, but I had the imagination saying that like everyone like took a trip to Korra's house and was waiting in a long line to like get their bending back. Like, here we go, guys. Like, it's a fun trip. It's worth it. You'll get it back. And it didn't happen like that. So it's kind of funny now that we didn't see that. Like, I'm wondering, Britt and everyone else too, like, are we going to see this in the future? Is that going to happen now, or
that happened in the comics? Road trip to Air Temple Island.
I imagine it's pretty exhausting, you know. Like, remember how I was saying like they need to feed everyone like chai tea or something to keep them going when they're lightning bending? I'm assuming they'd have to like keep Korra pretty well fed and like vamped up to get that all of that bending back and flowing.
All right. So the season closes with Tenzin saying, "I'm proud of you, Avatar Korra." And that's it. Do we have... I had feels. I'm not going to lie. That was intense. And, oh, Tenzin. Tenzin's so proud of his girl.
So. Yeah, those are big moments, because especially since we just saw Aang, and she thought he was a Tenzin there. It just... Because then it's like, oh, now it's really Tenzin. Yeah, have your moment. I appreciate this. He earned it.
So, any other thoughts? What do you think's coming up next, Brittany? Any predictions?
Well, we need a new big bad, so something's going to happen. But I was kind of hoping this would be my dream for season two. Is that season two is just the Odd Couple with Tenzin and Bumi living together for an entire season. And it's just episode after episode of, like, hijinks that Bumi pulls and Tenzin being annoyed. And then Katara comes over and, like, yells at them. And it's going to be great. That would be my ideal season.
All in the style of The Office and Parks and Rec and
Family. Oh, that would be fantastic. Like a mockumentary. Oh, my. Can you imagine? Ugh, I should have went to Comic-Con just to pitch that idea.
Oh, God. Brittany, if you had to predict, is this big bad a person or a spirit or like what? Where are you in that spectrum? How do you feel that would go?
I think it's going to be the air bison rising up.
Good.
Against like the okay. airbenders. No, I think it's going to be another person.
Okay.
But but they might think it's a spirit.
Uh-huh.
And then they have to go find a person.
Does this person bend or not bend?
They bend, because I want more bending.
Do you imagine them being a certain type of bending?
No.
Okay.
Maybe Earth. Earth would be cool. We haven't had an Earth big bad.
Okay. Okay. I love hearing newbies talk like this.
Maybe the boulder comes back.
Oh, know. Can you imagine?
Or the Dai Li. Ooh.
Maybe Sokka's not dead. Guys.
And he's an earthbender.
They're like people. It's like he has like an army of like people who are trained, highly skilled in boomerang abilities, and they come back and rise up against the Avatar because Sokka got hit in the head and forgot that he's actually a good guy.
And space swords. Don't forget space swords.
Yeah, space swords.
That sounds amazing. Well, we'll come back to that at the end of season two and see how many predictions Brittany got right. Let's keep a tally.
I had like 12. None of them will be correct.
All right, shall we move on to scenes and lines?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, Jack, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was Bolin and Asami confronting her dad for all the reasons that we said before. Just, I love Asami so much. And but at the start of the scene as well, which I forgot to mention earlier, is when Bolin just comes riding in on Naga, just throwing rocks and badass. And yeah, he's incredible. And I loved it.
All good things. Brittany?
Yeah, you guys know what my favorite moment was. It's when Boomy's jumping up and down on the ship as he comes into port.
And Tenzin's face.
Yeah, and Tenzin's face. Oh, it's so good.
Oh, long-suffering Tenzin. I love him so much. Mitch?
Yeah, mine's that cool moment that Jack was mentioning, that when Korra and Mako are attacking and holding themselves up on the wall with firebending, like wall running, kind of Prince of Persia style, is so cool.
Awesome. And my favorite scene was when Korra returns Lin's bending and she takes that moment and lifts all the rocks around the house. Yeah. Oh, I teared up. That was my only tear up in the whole thing. But like, as soon as the rocks go up, I was like, oh, my queen, Lin.
Those are very convenient rocks. They always kind of stick out to me that I'm like, oh, okay, well, that was cool. I guess they need to be there for that.
All right. Favorite lines, Jack.
Mine is the line when Tenzin has his, oh god, face, if he goes, great, now I have my brother to entertain. Oh, we just see reference to Boomy, and yeah, I loved it.
Brittany?
And then mine was Ikki's. I was like, yay, Uncle Boomy's here! And I was like, yay, Uncle Boomy's here!
Oh, Mitch.
I'm so excited to meet Boomy, guys. I'm sorry.
Can I just say that I cherry-picked this line because I knew everyone was going to want it, and that's fine, because you should want this line. It's Aang's most sage advice he's ever given. He says, when we hit our lowest point, we are open to the greatest change. Bam!
Very Avatar-y of him.
It's super Avatar-y of him. I remember that affected me so much when I heard it.
He got sage in his old age.
I'm always confused.
Not old age when he died.
Do you think they get to look how they want as this Avatar spirit? Because I think he was a little bit older when he died, I have the impression.
I don't know, would Roku want to look like an old man as spirit?
yeah, good point.
Alright, and I got my favorite line, sorry Mitch. Okay. Thought you didn't steal mine. When Iroh is being a badass and he knocks that plane into the Aang statue and it takes the mask off. And Iroh survives, and he looks at the statue and says, thanks for looking out for me, Aang.
And it's in Zuko's voice.
In Zuko's voice. Yeah.
It was so melodramatic, Zuko, that whole bit there.
Everything is perfect.
It was so good.
I love it. I love everything about it. All right, so just a reminder, if you want to get in touch with us, tell us all the feels that you felt about the end of Korra Book 1. Our contact info, once again, our email is rewatchablepodcast@gmail.com. Please mark if there are spoilers for our newbies. Twitter is @re_watchable. Again, this post on hypeable.com. And you can talk to Brittany all about Boomy on rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. I'm sure she'll
send out Boomy gifts. I still send out Boomy gifts, so even when we were doing Freaks and Geeks, I sent out Boomy gifts. People who were talking to me about Freaks and Geeks were probably like, what is going on?
And if you have enjoyed listening to the podcast, please leave us an iTunes review. It helps other people find the show and listen in and join our fun times loving on Boomy. So, and if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will instead raise you in a loving, caring home devoid of all forms of mental and physical torture. So that's not very common in the Avatar world, so you're very lucky. All right, so wrapping up our season one discussion, we've got some listener feedback. First, we got a bunch from Twitter. So first, our friends over at Avatar Central had a question for the newbies. So for Brittany, did the first season of Korra meet your expectations going into it, and was it different than you expected?
It met my expectations without a doubt, because I wanted it to kind of live up to Avatar, and it did. It was a lot different than I expected. I was not expecting so much emphasis on, like, this industrial-type revolution that I know I've brought up every time I've been on the podcast. So that was a little weird. But that was really the only difference. I think it really lived up to everything, and there was, except maybe the romance, there's a lot more romance going on. I liked the playful hints that Avatar had, because they were younger, I guess, and then it's more, like, drama-y in Korra. But bending-wise, animation-wise, I love Korra so far, so I'm looking forward to more. And I have Karen and Ariana's responses, too, because I asked them on Twitter what they thought.
All right, Jack has to say goodbye, but thanks for hanging out with us this time, Jack.
Thank you so much for having me on again. Jack, I love coming on and talking about Korra with you guys, so. And I'm going to force my way back on again. You guys aren't going to get rid of me anytime soon.
And Jack, what's your Twitter handle so people can find you?
It's at Jack Farr, JakkFarr. Right. Oh, I want to stay here talking to you guys. I have to go to work. It's Monday morning and it sucks and it's cold.
Well, let the thought of Korra keep you warm.
I'll just pretend I'm firebending.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah. All right, bye guys.
Bye, Jack.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, so Karen says, definitely met my expectations in terms of how great I was hoping it would be. I really loved it. And Ariana says, I didn't expect to love the grown-ups so much. The kids I'm still warming up to. Hashtag Linzin 5ever. So we have our new 5ever hashtag for book one of Korra.
Yay.
I mean, Zutara 5ever still applies to everything in life forever. But Linzin 5ever, I think I'm behind it.
Would one say that Linzin, yes, is the Zutara of Korra?
All right. Moving on from shipping. Mitch, do you want to take Peggy's?
There's a song playing in the background. We can make this really romantic, Peggy. Okay, do you hear that? It's my clock. Peggy wrote, just watched episode 12 of Korra. Hashtag Rocketman General Eyeroll lol.
It's true, though. And Brittany, you want to take the next one?
Sure. Andrew's Poma at Andrew_plural says, you could use blend bending for surgery, which is something I didn't think of. I guess last week we guys were talking about like what blend bending could be useful for, and surgery, I guess, would be true. You could like stop it from moving if you're working on something in the heart and then get it moving again and like circulation and stuff. So that's kind of cool.
Well, maybe a bloodbender was helping out with Yakone's face transplant, or Yakone was bloodbending himself for the face transplant.
That sounds creepy.
Yeah.
And gross.
He's like, just like looking in a mirror, bloodbending his face.
Oh, right. Gross. Oh, that's weird. Oh, that's weird. That's like worse than the worst on Grey's Anatomy.
Ugh. Okay, so Sammy at Monkey Pandamom wants to thank me for the impression of the boulder. It was perfect. And yay, now I feel pressured to do it again.
Well, wait, can you read her comment? Can you read her comment, her tweet at you in the boulder's voice? I think that's pretty easy.
Oh my god. I have to prepare. Thank you, Purple Haired Wonder, for giving me the impression of the boulder unrewatchable for Atla. It was perfect.
Yay!
I love it.
Okay, Mitch, Lynn's is yours.
Lynn Walker at Oh Hey It's Lynn wrote, Sunday will now be known as hashtag or quotes checking iTunes for rewatchable episode day. Would it put the pressure on me as well? Jeez, these are pressureful tweets. They're not meant to be.
I know. Every Sunday morning, we get a couple tweets that are like, it's rewatchable day. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we're recording at 6:30 p.m. Yeah. Oh, we have not recorded yet. I'm so sorry.
Brittany, want to take Gordon's?
So Gordon at Toonie Chopperman says, listening to the episode, thinking about the dead gang, thinking about what it'd be like to be the only one of them still alive, thinking which of my siblings will be the last one alive, too sad to sleep now. Thanks, Mitch. Yeah, thanks, Mitch. Must you ruin
Gordon
everything?
Likes picking on me. I pick on him back. It's okay.
With a quality gif of Sokka saying, must you ruin everything? and Mitch, you want to read Zach's email?
Right, so we had a special email coming in from Zach. It was a really important one and a bit somber, but I am very impressed with what Zach is doing to be in the good position in life that he's in now. He wrote, I wanted to tell you all a little bit about myself so I can just show how much the podcast means to me. Back in December, I began experiencing some of the most troubling symptoms of depression, and since I've been diagnosed with severe depression and a multitude of anxieties, I have my ups and downs, strong contrasts of each other, but I'm still here. I made it through some really tough patches with the help of my friends and family and through podcasts. Yours is one of the most important to me, beginning with Veronica Mars. It got me into the show and fandom, and I've since tried in vain to create more marshmallows out of my friends and family. I followed through the train wreck that was Pushing Daisies, though I didn't hate it as much as some of the podcasters. I'm going to add in a hashtag clucking hens there. Avatar came along, Avatar came along, and I really got hooked. I started getting excited for episodes to be released, which has reached a high with Korra. I sometimes find myself obsessively refreshing and checking Twitter to see if a new episode has been released. This is part podcast obsession, part Korra obsession. In summary, you guys are very special to me. I enjoy hearing your voices every week, discussing some of my favorite things. You make me happy and you lift me up when I'm down, and that's something I greatly appreciate. I'm not sure if I could ever fully explain how much the podcast means to me, though perhaps this novel I've written just will show you that in some detail. I want to thank you guys again for what you do and for the work that you put into making a great podcast every week. You guys are truly incredible, and I'm so happy I started listening. Cheers and love, Zach. Oh my gosh.
Thanks, Zach.
Yeah.
Also,
feels bending.
Zach is at Zach H Official, and he live tweets the podcast. So if you're interested in not listening to us, but listening to what Zach thinks of us, then you should follow him and do that.
It's super cute.
It is.
We appreciate you, Zach. Feel better. We hope that we're helping you get through all that's going on. That's a lot to have to deal with, but we're meant to make people happy. Not Katara dueling angry. We do that sometimes, but
we're glad you're still with us.
Toaf angry too. That happened too. Natalie still says Toaf. I should pick on her for that more often when she's on next.
Okay.
Are you flying over me, Caitlin?
Yeah. Let's just keep flying. Mitch is the great divide of this episode.
I agree.
All right, so that wraps up our coverage of The Legend of Korra Book 1. Luckily for all of you, or maybe unluckily, depending on how you feel about it, there are 3 more books to go. So we will start on Book 2 next week. Hopefully you will have some more variety in hosts because people will be back from Comic-Con. And until then, I am Caitlin.
I'm
Jack.
No. I'm Brittany.
And I'm Mitch.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.